from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station.
This hour of Afternoons with Arcan and Hart is brought to you by East Coast Metal Roofing, the official roofing partner of the Boston Celtics. Act now and save 10% during their Fall into Savings sale event.
It's over. Time to say it again, Boston. Anything's possible. Banner number 18 has been secured.
The 2024 Bill Russell Finals MVP goes to Jaylen Brown.
What are they going
to
say now?
Celtics ownership group announcing today that it plans to sell its stake in the team.
The plan, the expectation is to sell the team in two parts, 51% going fairly soon, 49% then closing in a second closing. That's the expectation.
Jason Tatum, the richest contract in NBA history. He will become the first $70 million per year player.
Overall, I can still get better.
The man elected not to play, Jason Tatum.
Steve Kerr, that's some straight bullshit.
Were you surprised to be left off Team USA? Do you think they had any role in you being left off?
I do for sure. There'll be more stuff to come with that. I'm not gonna comment on it.
No one in the NBA is scared right now of the Boston Celtics.
People are gonna say the target's on our back, but I hope it's straight in our forehead and between our eyes. I hope I can see the red dot.
Here's Tatum's back to Brown for the slam. Washington tries.
Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Goosebumps. Great work there from Brian Frazoco on that montage of the Celtics offseason, postseason, and now the new season begins here tonight at TD Garden. This is WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here today. We are broadcasting live from the Big Night Studios next to the Card Vault at TD Garden. If you're a content creator looking for a place to record, do it here. Book your time at bignightmedia.com. Also, there is a watch party. If you don't have tickets to the game, you can get tickets to the watch party upstairs in Studio B, which is right up above us, I believe. And you have to be 21 or over. You can get the tickets for that on Ticketmaster. And Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, I believe, up there recording their podcast right now. But they gave us the nice studio, which was really the right decision, I think, when it comes down to, who the people are really out here to see. Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, cool guys, nice guys, pretty good basketball players in their day. But this is WEEI Afternoons with host one and host two.
It's true.
I think we all know where the priority lies.
They're starting to line up, too.
Yes. You're seeing it here.
Can you give me a t-shirt? I know you. Yeah, you have people.
What kind of t-shirt?
One of these.
Oh, that are on the chairs?
Well, Banner 18.
I'm going tonight, so yeah.
Can you give me one?
No.
You suck ass.
I'm not going to steal somebody's, and I'm going to keep mine, obviously.
Well, look for one. I'm sure somebody will get drunk and forget it or something.
That might happen, but I don't know. I mean,
I'm probably going to be the one
who gets drunk and forgets it, if we're being honest here.
Well, then get drunk and steal one. Why are you going to forget it? Steal one.
That could happen,
too. If you're drunk, go to steal.
All right.
Thanks.
I mean, we'll see.
Great message to all the fans going to the game tonight.
Yes. What?
No. People get leave these shirts around. Yeah, the commemorative cups. You ever want one of those? You can always look around and find those. People tend to leave some of the commemorative stuff around, in all honesty, because they get drunk and forget about it.
Yep, that's true. I'll see. I'll see if that happens or not. And if I do, I'll see if I can find the extra
Thanks,
small
Pete.
For you, Andy.
No, not like you. I've seen the way you wear your shirts, your schmediums.
Sometimes. This is a nice big one.
No,
here.
That's a normal size shirt. Yeah. You get on. What does it say?
It says, "You got Boston."
Okay. Was that a freebie? Was that on a seat back?
Yes, it wasn't on a seat back, but I got it for free somehow. I forget where I got this one.
Bit of a moocher. I need to learn from you.
But I like that one. I like that because it was, "We want Boston," and then it was, "All right, we got Boston." That was a cool answer to that. And I thought a good rallying cry for the whole playoffs last year, that the Celtics just steamrolled through everybody. I mean, even that big shot by Jaylen Brown in the corner to beat the Pacers, they swept them. Like, that was going to be, at worst, like a 5-game series. They were so dominant. They were so just strong defensively, hitting their threes, sticking to the plan, not deviating from it when it seemed like there were, and there weren't a lot of times that this was even the case, but when it seemed like, okay, maybe we're shooting too many threes, maybe this is unsustainable doing this night in and night out, they stuck to it and they won the whole freaking thing.
I agree with all of that. And it just, you got me thinking, you got us, we want Boston. And I've been making the comparisons to the 07 Patriots, which obviously turned into a scandal and sort of us against the world mentality.
Yes.
Does this team need a rallying cry, a motivation beyond sort of the normal or the obvious?
We know two guys have it.
The Olympic thing?
Tatum and Brown have it from that. I don't think it's weak. I mean, it may be just because it's only them, you know? It's not like a whole team.
Because like Drew Holiday and Derek White, what's their Olympic motivation?
They're feeling great about the Olympics.
I got a gold medal. I don't know what you guys are bitching about over there.
Seriously. And Tatum won one too, in fairness. But
so that's where I wonder.
He did get benched and didn't play, and I think that that's something that's going to motivate him. But you're right. I mean, for the whole team, there's not much.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes those are organic. I understand they come the middle of the season.
It's going to be like anything
happens.
Kendrick Perkins ever says. There's going to be.
I mean, it could
bulletin board material.
It could be, or it could be the way teams treat them, or something that evolves over the course of the schedule and the season. It could be something that a fan base does.
Right,
a fan base says there, because there's going to be backlash, because when you're universally anointed and you're on the top of the hill, you're taking shots from everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just players, but fans, social media, other series, pregame shows, national.
Absolutely.
Like, there's going to be some shots along the way, and you're also going to be held to a very high standard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the littlest slip-up for them will be treated differently than OKC or the Bucks or the Knicks or anybody else.
What could even do that?
I don't know.
If they, all right, here's what it'll be. If they lose big tonight, or they go and play the Bucks with Giannis and Lillard healthy and they beat them, and they, you know, the Bucks beat them, I mean, and they start losing to some of the teams that were banged up in the playoffs, because that's
overrated.
Really, exactly. You only won because those guys were injured and you had this easy path to the finals and you didn't
There's real teams.
It's not so easy when the best player, when Jimmy Butler's playing and Giannis is playing and Lillard's playing, all these guys are playing, and the Knicks aren't all decimated with injuries and whatever else, and they didn't even have to play half those teams. Like, they played the teams that beat those teams when they got them in the playoffs. So I think that that's maybe it. I mean, I can't think of too many other things, because the one thing you can critique, and I don't really buy it, but because you can only play who's in front of you, but you had such an easy path to the finals that if you had to go up against any of these teams fully loaded like you were, except for Porzingis, then you might not have had such an easy path. You might have even gotten knocked out like you had the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You had a charmed path to the finals, and if these teams that are now healthy, and I say that, I use that term loosely, because the Sixers, their two guys are out. They're not going to be playing in the opener tonight, but you know, Milwaukee, New York, et cetera, teams like that, if they beat the Celtics up a little bit here in the early going, I could see that narrative starting to form. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I do believe some of that is on Joe Mazzulla. Coaches have to cultivate those types of things. Like, Belichick was a mastermind at that. Belichick would pull seemingly benign shots from afar or whatever and really get the guys that he knew he could poke their buttons frothing. And if you get those guys frothing, then everybody else usually just sort of falls in line behind them. But that just sort of snuck up on me. Sometimes, you know, these best teams, these great teams, they need that little extra motivation or that little extra narrative or storyline or talking point that can get them through what could be, there could be some boring games.
Yeah.
Based on the preseason, like, if they're just going to blow people out, and, you know, my comparison to the 07 Patriots, remember some of those early season games that was like second quarter 35-3 or something? You know, sometimes you need a little extra to get you through, or you start to let human nature creep in. Now, also included Tom Brady, who at that time was voicing, we want to kill everybody.
Yeah.
We don't just want to win, we want to blow everybody out. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that, I think, was scandal-driven and scandal-motivated.
I think it was a lot of that,
right. So, but
there's no scandal around these Celtics, you know?
No, but do they just have the, you know, the what do they call it, the red ass? Like, do they just want to show everybody we're that damn good?
Mm-hmm. And everyone thinks we suck.
Yeah, is there an inherent Brown and Tatum, we want to destroy people, we want to do things that, you know, haven't been done in a while, or maybe have never been done, depending on how you look at it and it plays out.
Yeah. Is there a lot of animosity with other teams? Are there teams out there? I know that starting five thing on Netflix is out. I haven't watched it yet, but I've seen clips of it. And it seems like guys, you know, Edwards and Tatum going back and forth at each other. It's not super angry or anything.
No,
it's not
playful.
Like, it's not like the Bad Boy Pistons out there clotheslining Robert Parrish.
Yeah, who's their rival?
Yeah, I'm not sure about
who's going to muster that up.
You know?
Still probably the Heat, right?
I'd say,
I guess,
but I mean, you
it'll turn
them.
One-sided, but for the last couple of years, it's been the Heat.
Yeah, it's been the Heat lately, I'd say. I think that the Sixers consider themselves to be rivals with the Celtics. They're not. I think the Knicks consider themselves, you know, with everything that's going on here, like we're a good team in the East. They're a good team in the East. You're not the Celtics' rival.
No.
The Nuggets are the only team that had any success beating them last year, so I'd maybe say them, but then you didn't play them in the finals, and so that's not really a rivalry either. I'm sorry. I don't think that there's a whole lot of that right now at the beginning of whatever this is. And I think we could be at the beginning of something very special here in the city of Boston. Something special for the Boston Celtics, which have had, as we just talked about, historically a lot of special stretches in different decades. This could be the beginning of that. And I think that's really exciting. I mean, I see why everyone's all pumped up about this. And I see that, you know, Wick Grosbeck did everything that he possibly could to keep this team with dynasty aspirations together for as long as they can. And not in the way that Robert Kraft kept Brady and Belichick together, like actually signing guys to long-term deals and going way into the luxury tax and doing whatever he had to do, and then of course selling the team. But we'll see what happens with that. But that's sort of what I mean, you know, like he committed to it, and on his way out the door he put everything in place.
And along those lines, it just kind of hit me that we've been talking about this game for whatever 3.5 hours now.
Yes.
I don't believe we've said a name that we probably should say. Can you think of a name that's been omitted from this discussion?
Sam Hauser.
No.
No, we haven't said Sam Hauser.
We haven't said Sam Hauser, but that was not the name.
We talked about Tatum. We talked about Brown. We talked about...
I would look up
Jordan Walsh.
How about Brad Stevens?
How about Brad Stevens?
I don't feel like we've mentioned him at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, the discussion point when Wick called him and he was like, so what
I mentioned Brad Stevens very early on in the show, but yeah.
Very early.
And it was
maybe.
Very brief.
Happy birthday, Brad.
Talk about him a lot.
It's his birthday today?
Yeah, 48 years old.
No kidding.
Oh, and he gets a ring and a banner and a cake. And
gee willikers.
I wonder if, you think Belichick will be in his box? In Brad Stevens' box. Clarify that comment.
Tonight? Yeah.
Well, I feel like he could be.
I bet you'd be here.
I feel like I'm going to make a prediction right now that we will see Bill Belichick and Brad Stevens hanging out in that box together.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
I'll keep an eye out.
Because Bill likes to... He likes to be where the cool people are a little bit. He likes to, which I'm not necessarily his maze, that he went to his own corn maze a couple days ago. And it's
yeah,
all
right.
Over social
the corn
media.
Maze was made for him, right?
Yeah,
it was like,
it's like,
was
his,
it like his face.
Yeah, no, it's his corn maze. So he went to it. But shouldn't you know the way out, though, if you know your face? Like, you look in your own face in the mirror all the time, you should know the lefts, the rights, and the ways out. But,
I suppose.
No, Brad Stevens built this team.
Yep.
Like, I feel like we talked a lot about Mazzulla and his evolution as the head coach, and maybe he's the right guy to keep them moving forward. Now, I do believe...
I don't think Mazzulla's made one bad move. Not Mazzulla. I don't think Brad Stevens made one bad move.
I don't
move.
Either. And at this point, I'm not sure he has any more moves to make.
Right.
I don't know if he really can. He kind of just needs to put his feet up, enjoy a beer, and say, hey, I gave you the guys. Go win a couple more titles.
And I also think, and it's not really fair, because I do think he's made a lot of shrewd moves here, especially early on, before it was just, all right, here's unlimited money and
right.
just re-sign everybody. When you have an owner who's willing to go this far and spend this much money and go this far into the tax aprons and all that, it makes your job a lot easier, doesn't
it? Oh, sure.
It? Yeah.
But the job he did to get the guys that are making a lot of money,
yeah.
specifically the Jrue Holiday deal, like the way he manipulated that offseason, you have to look at Milwaukee and say, yeah, we really didn't see that unfolding the way that just unfolded for us, right? Like that was, he did a really good job. And I don't think it was all easy. He obviously targeted Porzingis and had wanted Porzingis for a while. I don't think it was necessarily easy to move on from Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he made some tough decisions along
Agreed.
The way. I think the Porzingis thing could have blown up in their face. Could have absolutely blown up in their face. It didn't, and it hasn't yet. We'll see where his health goes and what he is moving forward. I just think Brad Stevens, for a night when we're celebrating not just a title and a ring and a banner, but the embarking on a potential dynasty and
right.
the pursuit of another title, he's at the center of it all. Even the development, to some degree, of the relationship between Tatum and Brown and keeping them together. Don't tell me he had nothing to do with that. It's impossible for the role he's had with this team, first as their coach and then in the front office, for him to have nothing to do with that. So he gets some of the credit there, I feel like.
Yeah, he should. He absolutely should. We're going to ask the biggest questions that this team has going into the season, talk about the opponents in the Eastern Conference, what they did to try and stop you, and the sale of the team. Could that have an impact on the way things go this year? That's all stuff we'll be getting to right after Brian Furzocco tells you what's trending.
You think Belichick will be in his box?
A-U-D-A-C-Y. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
even though it was a short off season with the Olympics, and you know, it's crazy to think that we got practice tomorrow. In a sense, like, I missed being around these guys. Last year was so special. We had so much fun playing the right way and playing as a team, and we were so excited for each other's success on the court. Like you said, the three that X hit in game three of the finals, like, I don't know if he played the two games before that, but he got in and he knew what to do, and we all trusted him. So I've missed being around everybody. I missed those moments of, you know, playing at home, practicing, going into somebody else's arena and winning by 25. Like, just the camaraderie that we have, it's special. And when you, like, you've been on teams that it's not like that, and when you have it, you want to cherish it, and that's what we have. Ain't it fun?
Discussing how much fun it is and how cohesive the team is, and how you heard the other day he was saying how he wouldn't want to start over anywhere else, and he loves it in Boston, he loves the Celtics, loves the organization. All great things to hear.
He's making $70 million a year.
I mean, that's a good reason to not want to go anywhere and start anew anywhere. But, I mean, listen, he'd be making that $70 million if he got traded.
He's got a sneaker deal, because I'm looking literally straight ahead at the person waiting in line wearing his Tatums.
Where?
Right there, the black and fluorescent green ones.
They were blocked by the camera, but yeah, I see those.
There's a lot of ads rotating, too, for the Tatum threes. I don't care for the ad campaign. It's like blurry. I don't know if it's intentionally blurry or not, but
I haven't noticed that, but I do like the shoes. I do.
I know
them.
You do. You're all over them.
I'm a fan. I haven't bought them because they're a lot of money, but I do like them. And I already have. My wife says I have too many shoes anyway, so I'd have to sneak them up into my other closet or something. Anyways, this is a team that is very cohesive, obviously. A team that I think has develop some real chemistry over the course of that one season with them all together. And I think that the biggest questions for this team are questions that are going to face every team. There's not a lot of them. This team doesn't have a lot of things to really pick apart. One of the things, and the only real thing, is Porzingis. And I guess I was right. You were right. I did mention injuries to begin with, because he's injured to start the year. He's not starting the year with this team. He played 57 games last year, which is up there with his career highs in terms of the durability. And I think that that's something to keep an eye on this year. You might have gotten your one healthy Porzingis year, and I use air quotes for that because he wasn't healthy, but for him, that was a very healthy season last year, and he was very productive. Without that production for 57 games or however many games, and assuming that you get to a postseason and you're trying to rely on him, that could be an issue. And it's not even so much that. It's that the backup now in Al Horford is 38 years old and is already somebody I think they're going to be keeping in the load management column when it comes to back-to-backs and things like that. And it's going to be a while before you see Porzingis out there playing again, and I just wonder how much of that Horford's going to be able to shoulder. Now, I just saw Tito Horford over in the grocery store going down the escalator a minute ago, so he's around, and I don't want to say this in the sense that I don't believe in Al Horford, but at 38 years old, you have to, in the back of your mind, be expecting or at least wary of certain things that could happen and things that may derail his season. I mean, that's just good common sense when you're talking about a 38-year-old big man. I'm sorry. Like, I'm looking at a guy in a Shaq jersey right now. Did Shaq even play till 38? If he did, by the end, you remember what he looked like. You know, this is Al Horford. We'll see what he looks like this year, and I think he'll be fine. But I also don't know how much of this onus you can put on him with Porzingis out, and once it gets down to the lesser, you know, once it gets down to your Luke Kornets and Xavier Tillmans and guys like that, that's all of a sudden not this incredible starting five anymore. Now it's a starting four, very good starting four, with kind of a question mark at the five.
Yeah, and I don't think that'll be an issue in the regular season for me personally, because you're not going to push the point. Regardless of what is going on elsewhere, you're going to be smart and cautious with Horford. But if you get into the postseason, you may be pressured to kind of, you know, run him into the ground, quote unquote, so to speak. And then that could be an issue. But again, it's high class issues when you're talking about, you know, kind of down the rung of your roster. And not only are you going to face issues, I doubt they're going to make it through a perfect season perfectly. But is anybody else? Like, there's going to be issues. You just mentioned it in Philadelphia. They're already without guys.
Yep.
It's opening night, and they're going to be without guys.
And Embiid and George are not playing tonight.
Right. So
a lot on Tyrese Maxey and Kyle Lowry out there.
You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be better than everybody else. And that goes with on the court, but also dealing with adversity in injuries and things that come up over the course of the season. And when you, again, they're the anti-Patriots. I thought the Patriots, when you start out with the worst roster, you get worse as the season goes on, because you get hurt, you lose guys. When you start out with the best roster, you have the best chance to go through that, mm-hmm. right? You have the best chance to lose somebody and still be really good, elite, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, is that a concern? And I have your concerns with Porzingis. It worked last year. It worked, I won't say perfectly, but relatively well. And he's had such an injury history.
Yes.
And he's such a big guy. Like, you tend to just think those guys are kind of more breakable, have yeah. durability issues.
Absolutely.
So I would say...
I think that about Wembanyama. I think that about
100%.
Any big Giannis, any big tall guy Holmgren. Who runs the floor like that.
Holmgren, sure. All of them.
Any
they
of
look
big,
breakable.
Lanky guys who run the floor and who shoot, you know, have an outside game and, you know, the handles and things like that. Yeah, that's like 7 feet of trying to switch directions and plant and right. go the other way. Like
the kid that's going to Florida,
yeah.
7'9" kid.
Right.
Definitely breakable.
Well,
although he looks less
Olivier
breakable.
Or whatever his name is, yeah, something
but,
like that.
Yeah, they look breakable, they seem breakable, but who knows? And you finally found, though, that is the cynical, because I was talking about it feels like everybody's all in on everything to do with the Celtics,
yep.
positive, almost beyond what Bostonians and New Englanders should be feeling and doing. That's the one angle, is that, oh, you had the one good year out of Porzingis, that's going to blow up in our faces.
Yeah, and I don't think that this team necessarily couldn't have won last year without him.
Yeah.
I think that they probably could have. I think that this
They
was,
basically did win it without him. He played,
I mean,
like
did,
four
yeah.
playoff games.
It's true. He didn't
but
play
he was
much in the
really
playoffs.
Good in a couple of them.
Yeah,
and
but
he was.
Do you think they needed
remember
them in any of those games?
Where he was like the best player on the court. It was like 16 points or something.
Game one against Dallas.
But is they won the rest Dallas? Of the series pretty much without him. I know he played a little bit in game five. But do you feel like at any point in that series they needed Porzingis?
No. I don't think in that playoffs they needed really Porzingis based on who they were going up against. But if they had gone up against Jokic, if they had gone up against Embiid, if they had gone up against, you know, Giannis or somebody like that, then yeah, I think not having Porzingis might have hurt him a lot more than did going up against Pascal Siakam and Kevin Love and, you know, the rest of those guys that they saw. What's the name of the guy who was talking on the Mavericks? What's his name?
Derek Lively.
Like, yeah, Derek Lively was like, I'm actually one of the best bigs in the league. It's like, okay, man, like that's
I don't
nice
know anything he
that.
Does well.
yeah, but that's
well.
Sort of the point. I mean, Porzingis not being there wasn't the end of the world when you're going up against those kind of teams. By the way, Joe Braverman just texted me, Shaq retired at 39. He was 38 in his last year in Boston, which just so happens to be the age that Al Horford is. Not saying he's going to look like Shaq when he was with the Celtics.
Say.
But it is something to keep an eye on. I mean, I expect that you're not going to see the prime-looking Al Horford. I'm not really sure that you saw that last year. But either way, that's, again, a very high-class problem to have. Here's another high-class problem to have. Or maybe it's not. I don't know. Jason Tatum, not great in the playoffs, not great in the Olympics, claims to have fixed his shot, and we saw some warm-up videos, you know, him over at the Auerbach
Center. Evidence.
Shots seemed to be falling. It wasn't in a game, obviously, but is this something that may carry over?
Absolutely. We talked a little bit about the Celtics, whatever it was, 3 weeks or a month ago, and my biggest concern for this team is, where is Jason Tatum?
Yep.
Is he truly, I just saw old friend Glenn Ordway tweeting out, they're going to win the title and Tatum's going to win the MVP. If Tatum is going to win the MVP, then they're going to win the title. Like, if he has that kind of year, but is he going to have that kind of year? And is the shooting, yips, you're famous for asking about yips. Mm-hmm. Does he have some sort of shooting yips thing? Ask Jalen Polk, is it a mental hurdle? Like, these are real things that
yep.
tend to snowball, and that will cause not just execution issues in terms of him making or missing shots. That'll cause you to change the way you play, right? Like, the end of games
Definitely.
May change. If he's not shooting well, you may have to decide you treat things at the end of games differently. And I don't know that he'll like that. Even though he'll probably know I'm not shooting well, that doesn't mean he automatically likes the fact that he's no longer the go-to guy with the game on the line. So that would be my biggest legitimate concern for this team, is Jason Tatum continues to shoot in October and November and December the way he did last summer for the Celtics and then last summer for Team USA.
And by the end, Jason Tatum was not the go-to guy at the end of those games.
No.
I mean, and he shouldn't have been.
Be.
He was missing those shots. He didn't seem to come up big in those spots. Brown did. And it's as simple as that. I mean, really, you don't have to look any further. And that's not something...
Can I look at that corner three in Indy?
That's what I'm saying.
How about that?
That's exactly right. Like, I don't think Tatum makes that shot. And listen, on the 08 team, you know, Pierce and Garnett are upstairs. They'll probably tell you the same thing. If it was the game on the line, Ray Allen was probably the best shooter, but Paul Pierce would take that shot.
Right.
And he was a very clutch shooter. Paul Pierce was great at the end of games. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that, again, a good problem to have. Well, who's the guy, which all-NBA superstar are you going to give the ball to at the end of the game? You got two options, and one's better than the other. Unless Tatum, really, it's like in his head, and all
right.
of a sudden, it's like he can't perform in those situations, which I don't think we're at that point yet, but that's something to keep an eye on.
But I also would say, if I wanted to be the optimistic side of that, It's not like he's incapable of playing basketball if he's not hitting his outside shots.
Right.
He's pretty damn good at taking it to the rim and creating and doing the things that I think they want to do and kicking out and the various ways. I mean, that was one of the storylines last year was how he can impact a game even if he's not shooting well, right? The whole quote where I don't care about my stats when he took more shots than anybody in the game. That rubbed me the wrong way. But there is some reality to that, that he's still developing as a man, as a physique, that can take it to the rim and probably play a different style of basketball at a higher level if he had to do that more often and didn't. Hell, he might become a better player in the eyes of some. Some people get sick of seeing him, you know, the old dribble, dribble, shoot, dribble, dribble, shoot kind of thing out there. And if that's taken out of his game for a little while, maybe it forces him to play a different way. So even that, I think you can kind of spin as a positive.
Yeah, I think you probably could. All right, another question. And this question is, what team in the Eastern Conference should the Celtics have any sort of, maybe fears a little strong, but reservations about? What's a team that you look at on the schedule and think, ooh, that could be a tough matchup?
Indiana. Because I am not buying into the newly built teams. I'm not buying into the rebuilt Bucks.
Okay.
I'm not buying into the newly, even though I love Karl-Anthony Towns. I am a big Karl-Anthony Towns fan. Wanted him
surprised
in Boston
to hear
for
you
years.
Say this. Yeah,
love
I know you like him.
But I'm more dubious
but
of
he's gonna
the...
he's going to suck on the Knicks.
Well, it's not as much about him as I just think they throw bodies together in the NBA with the expectations of elite play, unlike any other sport. Like, they don't take into account the growth period, the feeling out period.
Chemistry with the teammates. Yeah,
like all of that. So until I see that work, I'm going to assume that that's going to have some hurdles along the way. I think it's going to be one of these younger, developing teams that have been there and are starting to achieve a little something. So I'll take Indiana.
Indiana, who in the offseason re-signed Pascal Siakam, re-signed Obi Toppin, extended Aaron Nemhart, extended T.J. McConnell, and signed James Wiseman, who I think stinks, but whatever. It's the one guy that they signed in the offseason to go along with Tyrese Halliburton and the other guys on that roster. That was a mismatch, obviously, in the playoffs last year, but some competitive games.
Yeah.
It wasn't all blowouts. They didn't kick their ass every single night, and so I could see that maybe being a thing, but I think it's this team you're saying here tonight. I think that they put a roster together, and I agree. There's some new guys, obviously. Bridges and Towns are new. They also signed Cameron Payne and Landry Shamet, who I think are going to be sort of end-of-the-bench guys, but they extended Brunson. They re-signed Ananobi. They re-signed Achiuya. They've got a lot of the same Josh Hart is still there. They got a lot of the same pieces still in place, and I think that they did what you they had the kind of offseason that I think most teams would like their team to have. Like,
sure.
You made good trades, you made good signings, you extended the players you're supposed to extend. It was a very Celtics-esque kind of offseason for the Knicks, and they're doing all of this to compete with the Celtics, and I think that they, more so than the Indiana and some of these other teams, are built, and when I say built, I mean guys who can defend 1 through 5, guys who can switch in the pick and rolls, guys who can shoot threes. Carl Anthony Towns is a very good big man shooting threes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Take Porzingis right out of the paint there. What was that? Oh, cat, Carl Anthony Towns, right.
Meow.
Sorry. I was like, what the hell's going on? But yeah, and I think Jalen Brunson is a tremendous player. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league and is probably going to be an All-NBA-er again this time, maybe even first team. So that's good. I'm happy that this is the first game. I'm happy that this is the first matchup. So the Celtics can look right in the eyes, a team that spent their entire offseason dedicating it towards beating them and putting a roster together that has the Celtics in mind. This is why we traded for this guy. This is why we re-signed these players. This is why we put the roster the way it is right now. It's a star-studded roster, I'd say, for the Knicks. Them and the Sixers, I'd say, probably have the most star power. Maybe Milwaukee with Giannis and Lillard, but they didn't really do much this offseason. And that's sort of why I'm glad that this is their opening night matchup.
Well, and it's fun for the league,
yeah.
And it's fun for a Celtics fan because you feel like, I mean, you're hoping for a statement win.
Right.
You're hoping for that emphatic statement win, kind of like you brought up earlier, the Panthers against the Bruins.
Exactly.
The wrong side of that.
Be on the right, way, though.
Yeah, be on the right side of that this time. Or,
well, technically, the Panthers were the reigning champs, and they won, so it's sort of like you want to be on that side.
Yeah,
but I know what you mean. Yeah.
From a Boston perspective
right.
side. But the other thing is, it could also be a wake-up call.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the Knicks come out here and look like a team that is destined to give you problems all year long and be competition for a title and to go through the East. And that might be good, too, right? Like, we've talked a little bit about the Patriots, how they came out and maybe built some false confidence out of what happened in Cincinnati in the opener. Not at the same level, obviously, but just in a different way. But I would lean to believe, I think the Celtics are going to come out in statement game. Now, I don't know. Do you know any of the trends in these? Like, does the champion opening night, are there any trends?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. That's because I know for a while, for ESPN stats and info, but I have no idea.
In the NFL, for a while, the home teams did really well in those Thursday night openers, and then it kind of went sideways. The Patriots might have been one of the first to lose when Kansas City came into Gillette and took care of them. Kind of went sideways, and the trends have kind of petered out there. I didn't know if there was a banner/ring night trend in the NBA.
Well, you know what? I'll look it up during the break. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Your last chance to chime in on the Celtics before they raise banner 18 to the TD Garden rafters. We'll have odds and ends for you next.